This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly. E-40 from Northern California is widely known for creating slang, flouting the rules, and knowing everybody from everywhere.
I wonder what I'm going to do. Let's see what's my next move. I got to make my next move my best move. And a voice, it was God. It was definitely God because he just put it in my head. It was like, call little John.
40 spoke with me and my co-host, Ali Shaheed Muhammad, about Lil Jon, T-Pain, Tupac, and Too Short. But we started our conversation talking business, and in particular, the model that 40 provided New Orleans' own Master P when No Limit Records was just a twinkle in his eye. This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
I'm E-40.
Word up, E-40.
Thank you for being here.
Y'all hear me out there? I was wondering. Thank you for letting me be here.
I am in particular very interested in your business savvy and how you spread what you know to other independent businessmen that are these days viewed as, like, never having left their region. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to talk about is the relationship between the Bay and the South, in particular New Orleans and Atlanta. Could you tell people who don't know what your relationship with Master P is?
Oh, Master P. Me and Master P go way back. Master P started off, he's from New Orleans, but I believe his mama stayed in Richmond, California. And so, you know, when I was doing my independent grind, started out in 88, met P around, probably around 89.
Okay.
Somewhere around there, might have been around there. And he was just an eager young man, wanting to make this rap game work for him. And he stayed out there, did free shows and did everything he can do to get on. And he watched my blueprint and did his thing, man. We go on and on and on.
But did you guide him?
Kind of, sort of. He watched, and my Uncle St. Charles was probably one of the smartest men when it comes to independent music that you probably ever want to meet. You know what I mean? He was, you know, from him, I learned, and he learned from me, and we both took our lumps and bruises and scrapes and scratches from ups and downs and, you know, spending money here where it didn't work. But word of mouth was our cheapest form of promotion. You know, doing free shows and going out there networking and talking to, you know, other, like talking to industry people, but also, you know what I mean, putting our CDs and cassettes in people's hands that had hella slap in their trunk. You know what I mean? That had all the big sound systems and whatnot, and reputable cats too, you know. So just put it this way, all the ballers. So you put that CD in their hand, and you know, everybody in the hood here, and they're like, who is them? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's how I went. And the way St. Charles, my uncle, the way he came into play in the 70s, he had what they call a 45 record. Remember 45s?
Mm-hmm.
He had one of them out independently. And I always, when I was younger, I was like, Uncle St. Charles, we call him Uncle Chucky. Uncle Chucky, Uncle Chucky, I want to make a record one day. You know, he's like, okay, well, I'll be waiting. I got older. You know what I mean?
What was the name of his 45? You remember it?
Oh, man, it was called Rock Me in Your Arms. Shots rang from a pole. yeah, on the other side of it. You know what I mean? You know, I have the flip side. So, you know what I mean? So, I mean,
it was interesting. I have so many visuals right now.
Man, hey, it's crazy, but because he was spitting the soils, you know, the hood stuff too, but singing.
Right.
And producing too. So, but it wasn't rap. It was, you know, it was soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he'll pull up in Millersville at my grandmama's house. And in the trunk, he'd have a couple of boxes of his, you know, 45s. But he wasn't trying to sell them he was selling them to retailers, but he just so happened to have it in his trunk. And I was like, let me get one. I played it over and over and over, because I was just happy that he was my uncle with a record. So I just watched him. And so he came up with this ideal of this is the greatest ideal ever. You know, you all know about one sheets where you have, you know, name of your song and all the information, who you toured with or who you opened up for, you know, the barcode, you know, everything that you need that a retailer would need to order your cassette or CD or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he would put five cassettes or CDs in the package, and he made a list. He had this big book. It started off small, then it became like a big old encyclopedia of all the retailers in the nation, out there in Nebraska, Kansas City, Chicago, George's Music, Seventh Heaven up in Kansas City. You know what I mean? All over the place. Just all the back then, it was a lot of mom and pop stores. You remember?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so he would have all them. He'd send the one sheet out to all these people and give them and send our posters with it and everything, and send like give them like five or six cassettes and say, here, take this, take these for free, and spread the word. And if you like it, you know, hey, you can order at this number. So when they ordered, they would order from a place called City Hall Records, which is a one stop in the Bay Area. That was our main hub, real small. And so when they heard our music, you know, it just started spreading. So at first, City Hall Records wasn't, you know, them and music people, they were the two smallest one-stops. So at first they was like, man, you know, he rapped too fast, his voice too squeaky, you know what I mean? And then they was talking about my partner, my cousin Be Legit. It's like, yeah, and he rapped like he reading and his voice too deep. And it's like, man, that was our chemistry. They didn't know how we do it. And it wasn't like we rap. He just rapped in the pocket, you know what I mean? And I rap unorthodox.
Who was making that criticism? Was it the
it was the main people, the people that ordered it. It was Jason Blame and Robin and Walter over at City Hall Records.
So you're getting orders, but these are the people that's kind of like,
I think at City Hall Records we had somebody blocking our shine,
yeah,
in there.
One of the
youngsters up in there. I know a name, I ain't gonna say it, but later on, all of us became great business partners, all of us together, because we made money together. Because after a while, you know, a few months later, it was like St. Charles got that call from City Hall and music people like, hey, you remember those guys, the Click, E-40 and them? Hey, we need 5,000 of them records. We want to order 5,000. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's how I went, because they couldn't stop. It was in demand. And next thing you know, we just made money together. And it was cool after that. They understood that, you know, we was ahead of our time. And, you know, we spit the reel, and it's meant to be. And here I am to this day. And Master P got hooked up with St. Charles, and he ran that same system we all ran. And all of JT, the bigger figure, a lot of Bay Area rappers went through him, and that's how I went. And so after a while, it was time for me to move on. I had every major label in the world. I mean, any label that dealt with rap music wanted to sign me. I ended up going with Jive Records because I liked it, everything about them. They took on my kind of music, and they was good at it. Yeah. Tribe Called Quest is over there.
Yeah.
One of my favorite groups.
Questions about, so you guys were label mates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you interact? Did you work with the same people?
You know what? That's one thing about Jive that I didn't like. They really didn't never connect all the people on the label together like that.
Yeah.
You know? Real talk, because the Hieroglyphics, they was on the label at the same time, too, and they from Oakland, right in the Bay Area where we
right
from.
There in your backyard.
You know what I mean? Too Short, Spice One. Me and Spice worked together. I worked with Too Short like 7 years. No, let me see. I signed with Jive in 94. I did the record like 3 years later. Then I finally did the record with Too Short. Hmm. You know what I mean? But me and Too Short knew each other, but I had to work my way up the ladder for Too Short to recognize that, you know, it was a new guy in town.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I wish we would have worked together with the Tribe Called Quest, you know what I'm saying, me? Because Bonita Applebone and all that, I used to slap that in my Cutlass. Slapping that thing, for real. I had a trunk full of Throb in my car, man. Fosgate speakers. Zeus amp.
Yeah, it's interesting just hearing, you know, your business connection with Jive, because we were definitely screaming about ours.
Yeah.
You know, I think you guys, you had more of an independent, you were coming in as your own label.
Yeah.
With them. So it was a
I had a distribution deal.
Yeah, exactly. It was your business with them was way different.
And y'all was artists at the time.
Yeah.
See, my distribution deal went like this, because we was already selling, you know, anywhere between 150, 200,000 without no major.
Woo.
You know what I mean? So we was like, okay, if y'all sign us, we got to do the first 200,000 off top. We got to do the first 200,000, 75-25 with a distribution deal. We call it a pressing and distribution deal. That's a P&D. So they went for it, and then after the 200,000, this is my deal. I'm telling y'all my deal. They never did this ever again. And okay, so after I've sold the first 200,000, can't hold a reserve on it. Can't hold a reserve.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, can't hold a reserve on it.
Can you explain what holding the reserve means?
25%. You hold it back due to damaged product or returns.
Right.
All right, so then after, or whatever else, like it was suing or whatever, anything that has anything to do with stopping their money.
So you're basically actually getting 75, 25, not 50-50.
75, they get 25.
Yeah.
For the first 200,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Then after that, it kicked into a high royalty. Then I became an artist.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. After the first 200,000. So back then, they made their money because, you know, I was going gold and platinum. You know what I mean? So it was good. We had a good relationship, and I don't have no regrets with signing with Jive, and I love them for doing what they did, and they love me because we had to make we made a statement with that, you know, and here I am, not trying to flamboast, but you know they helped lace and they helped breed a true legend.
Hmm.
Well, I don't want to starship, but one of the things that I've heard both of you complain about is that Jive really kept you to one album a year.
That's what they liked it to do, but I was a little bit like, you know, I kind of they kind of listened to me because I had already proved to sell records without them before. You know what I mean? So I would do like I did a double CD. I was trying to do two and three CDs back then, like separate CDs, like sell them one or two in the store the same day. It's just they wasn't with it, but they did let me do a double CD. It's called The Element of Surprise. That came out in 1997. We had a double CD. Me and Be Legit, we put out E40 and Be Legit Presents Southwest Riders. That was a double CD. We went and got all the rappers from the South and the West and put them on it. That was a double CD. Then right after that, 98, I came with the Element of Surprise double CD. That was the one with Hope I Don't Go Back to Slinging Yale with me, Too Short, and KC of Jodeci. That was a big record as well. And I had did The Things That Never Change on that record too. No, that was on Hall of Game. So I got so many damn records. But
So at this time, though, you're still operating as a record label situation with Jive. So you could push out that amount of quantity. Like, you could do, like, you know, you could separate everything, do your E40 record. You could do a Click record. Or you could do anything else you wanted to.
Yeah, just get it done. As long as I got it done.
Yeah.
Right. And so the contrast is that Tribe was in a different deal.
Yeah, we're in a different deal. As an artist, you know, our situation was they wanted to maximize that record, that album, you know, and get as much as they can, squeeze as much as they could, and they needed time to do that.
Right.
You know, which that worked to our favor because it took Tribe a year to do an album or a little bit more sometimes. You know, we weren't quick about, like, five months, just not like, here you go. That wasn't our method. So it kind of worked at times. There were times that we wanted to do more. Like, maybe do a double record, which I don't think that was really wholly embraced at the time. But we're, like, you know, 90, 91, 92, 93.
Yeah.
You know?
I signed March of 94. My last album was with Jai was 2003. But, see, what I used to do when I had my distribution deal with Jai, I would spend my own money as well. Because back then, double page ads was it. So if you got a double page ad in the source, you one of them boys. So Master P, he have a double page ad. I'd be like, I'm having me a double page ad too. Used to be like 13,000 or something, but you know, just for a double page ad. But I just let me go on and crack that off so I can flamboast. So I can look like the big boys. You know what I mean? I made sure I put my bread in it too so I can get in where I fit in. So I won't look like I'm not in there with all the big boys. You know what I'm saying? But y'all took it to another level because y'all, like when I had Things That Never Changed, that Bruce Hornsby playover, they was trying to send me to Germany. you know, because they was pretty big worldwide, Jive. Mm-hmm. And y'all went ahead and did y'all thing. I was stubborn, didn't want to do it. So y'all benefited, you know, y'all legendary, you know what I mean? We both are in different categories, but we're not. But y'all did y'all thing, man. And I'm proud of Tribe, because I'm a fan for real. And I ain't saying it because you're here. You know I've been rocking with y'all.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you. So do you take, you know, like you've been putting out records constantly, you know, and in a consistent way that it's hard for a lot of artists to do. What do you take from your early experiences in distribution, like having the list of all the retailers and stuff like that across the country? How do you transition that to the now era of moving music? There's a lot of electronic distribution. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of mom and pop stores out there.
Right.
Or what is your method?
I'm independent again. I've been independent since 2009 with EMI. Got a distribution deal again. You know what I mean? To be honest with you, this is better. This one better. You know, they give me a budget. And what I do with that budget is I turn that budget into 2 and 3 albums. Hmm. And I sell them separately. So my fans rock with me. I got a solid fan base. And they love me and I love them. And they know I'm going to get them what they want to hear. So they buy all three. So nowadays, you know, the days of just going gold right off the back is not that easy because of the, you know, the downloads and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So I go ghetto gold. You know, if I sell 100,000 plus, I'm good. You know what I mean? You know, and all those albums definitely add up to that. But now the way my method is to Twitter, Facebook, all the social media, Instagram, you know, stand visual, rocking with all the everybody that's somebody that rock with me, you know what I mean? Being E-40, just twisting it up with the newer sound nowadays, you know, but not going out of my envelope and my jurisdiction.
Is all the social media stuff, is that the equivalent of a 2-page ad in the source?
Yep.
Okay.
It is. Like a banner on WorldStar?
Yeah.
That's equivalent to a 2-page ad on WorldStar. But not that much, but not as much as we was doing for the 2-page ads, but it's up there.
Right.
But it's when you got a banner on WorldStar, it's like you flamboyant. Oh, okay, I see his album coming out here. Okay, he on WorldStar, seeing his album cover on the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Who else is like WorldStar? There are like a few companies that are as effective?
I think they're the biggest when it comes to that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of other ones are too, but not like WorldStar.
Okay.
Really, for real. Real spiel. You know, and, you know, commercials, running commercials. I run a lot of commercials. See, you can make your own commercials, virals, do your virals, make some funny ones, make some that, you know, and put them on your YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. You can do that. You know, and then when you do your 30-second or 15-second, like I got 15-second spots I'm going to be running. I bought a bunch of them for MTV Jams, and I bought a bunch of them for Revolt.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So that's hitting the demographics of my fan base. You feel me? Mm-hmm. So you can do it like that, too. Because, you know, they don't have MTV Raps no more.
Yeah,
they don't have
music anymore.
Exactly, they don't have Rhapsody no more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when people think, like a lot of people, they might think I fell off, but they don't know I'm eating. I'm on the West Coast eating. It's just y'all, they don't hear about me because they don't see me on the TV,
right?
Like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm still around.
What about radio? Do you care about radio?
Yeah, I care about radio. It's always good to have radio. It's always good to have radio.
Has that process changed since the 90s? Your relationship with program directors or?
It's, you know, they got that thing called, what is it called?
PPM?
PPM. I don't know why I always get that messed up. So they got that they got just random people with the ankle bracelet. but with a bracelet or something. With a monitor. And they carry it everywhere. I'm stupid, right? I'm crazy. With a monitor. That's me with all this. See,
maybe it should be a ankle.
You know what it is? I deal with so many people that's locked up and are on house arrest. That's the first thing coming to my mind.
That's a good analogy, though. I like that.
Pretty much, because they got to take the thing everywhere or something like that. You know what I mean? So they, I guess it's based on that now, and it's, it ain't, I don't like it. I don't like it because I feel like good music is good music. You know what I mean? If it sound right, it's right. You know what? One thing about me, you know, I cater to, I'm not trying to act like I'm super hard on them, but I cater, my music really cater to the inner city. You know what I mean? I'm just one of them dudes that's serious, but I can make you laugh with my music too. But it's serious and it's real. With that being said, back in my days, I said a word, I said pimping in one of my words, in one of my songs. They beeped that out. So a lot of my hood songs never, that was real ghetto anthems, never made it to the radio because they felt like I was spitting the hard stuff. But later on, you know, other rappers started, you know, getting they hardcore stuff on the radio. So everything that they was, you know, everything they was putting out, they was rocking with it. So I was like, man, I wish I had that when, you know, during the early parts of my career, I'd probably definitely be further. But I don't gripe. I just grind it out and stay doing it. And when it catch, it catch. Like, I just, every year I give me a slap. You know what I mean?
Do you remember who got play with, like, a really hardcore song? Like, who was the first person? And how do you think they did? Do you think they paid?
Paid to get on the radio?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, because, see, you can have a hard-headed song, real hardcore, and eventually, it's going, you know, if it's cracking in the hood, you know what I mean, which is the confirmation to the suburbs to say this is the song we want to hear. This is what we're rocking with. The radio, they ain't gonna have no choice but to play it.
Right. Okay.
You know, and all they're gonna do, like I had a song called Captain Save-A-Ho.
It's 1993, and niggas need to miss me, be saving these hoes. You know how these tricks me, be buying them clothes. Wanna taxi hoes on Vogue with the beat, and have them sitting next to them in the front seat. But not BC, I'm a hog about the V. And my mop is fuck a hoe and hit the throttle to the smoke. Talking on my okie doke. Worldwide, I got a client up in Tokyo.
Look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane. What's that nigga's name? More faster than a speeding bullet to put on his cape, his card. I put it fake the funk, the funk. Not me, that's not the way to do. Captain motherfucking Save-A-Ho came to me. Flashing just like a little old batch all up in front of my company. Had to check his ass with ear checked up and punking. Talking to him while I'm beating his ass, pumping beer. Talking about nigga, you gon' retrospect something here.
Is a, should I Save-A-Ho? I wanna be saved.
I didn't make that song for radio. I made it for my fans. You know, in the streets. So the DJs came up to me and was like, Fody, man, bruh, you got a clean version for Cap Save-A-Ho? I say, no, but I can make one. So I made it the next day and sent it to them, and they played it. And that was a hardcore song. It wasn't hardcore like Shoot 'Em Up, Bang Bang. But some of the songs, like I love Ice-T. His music was just it. He had, you know, he had that 6 in the morning, Police at My Door. You know what I mean? They had to rock with that. They had to rock with the colors, you know what I mean? And, you know, of course, NWA, you know how hard-headed they was. They had to play it, though. They had to play it after a while. They tell you, Too Short? It didn't get no nastier than him. He was that boy. When he say, ooh, he's got a dirty mouth, but, bitch, I kept talking. Man, he could, everything he said, hey. But they played it eventually. He cleaned it up a little bit, and they start playing Too Short. He paved the way for me. You know?
Ali has a good story about Too Short. Open for you guys?
No, we open for Too Short. That would be something. Two shows opening for us. There would be something really wrong in the world.
Oh,
but yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah, you want me to tell that story?
I mean, you already told it.
I already told that story.
He's been around forever, man, Too Short.
What is what drives you to keep making music?
You know, I started off in playing drums in the fourth grade, and I played all the way, the snare drum and the bass and the marching band all the way to high school.
Yeah.
So that show you right there that I really do have a true passion, and I love rapping. You know, I know it's a message in my music. Because a lot of people hear my turn-up music, you know, with, you know, just club bangers. But I got songs that'll make gangsters cry. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. and I got something to say. So what drives me mostly is that I know that I was born to do this, and it is my occupation, of course, but I don't care if I was a billionaire. I still make music, even if it was just for me, and I just wanted to put it on the internet and just give it to them for free or something, or put it on iTunes and let them just, if you want it, go get it. You know what I mean?
So it's just a struggle of the people, I guess. You know, like you feel that and you just want to speak about it, basically.
Yeah. I'm telling you, a lot of people nowadays, they hit me on all the social media and they, 40, you raised me. You raised me like you was my daddy. They mean that by my music. Because I can tell you how to get out of a situation in my music, and I can tell you when you do get into a situation, you know, you got to know it's consequences and repercussions. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you choose to go this way, it's most likely, the chances are, it's going to end up that way. A lot of times, everybody don't make it out when they go hopping to the other thing, to the street game. You know what I mean? And I ain't talking about gangs. I'm talking about street game. And that's, you know, illegal stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I talk about how, you know, how back in the days, you know, it was cool to leave your screen door open, and now it's real dangerous. And, you know, how...
You talking about Practice Looking Hard?
Huh? You know about that?
Yeah.
You know about Practice Looking Hard? Right. That's one of many. I got one called Born in the Struggle. I got one called They Got Me Trapped. This is all recent. They Got Me Trapped was like one of the, is right now, one of the favorites in the penitentiary right now, because I got folks in the state and the feds. You know what I mean? And Got Me Trapped is just talking about everything. Talking about, they holler at the jailhouse lawyer. You know, the jailhouse lawyer is a dude that just got all the knowledge. And, you know, he ain't no real certified lawyer, but he read books. He always in the library. You know, it's just talk about real stuff. Like, you know, I say a part where I said, I'm making it like I'm the granddaddy. I'm like 31 years old, and I got a grandson. But all I can do is give him advice. You know what I mean? Because I'm in here for life. That's what I say. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So stuff like that, you know. But I can go on and on forever, man. And but what drives me, man, is just having that fire in my heart and saying, hey, first of all, I love this, and this is my hustle. This is what I do. This is my mama. She worked 3 jobs. Raised my daddy and my mama. Divorced when I was 8 years old. I was 8. My brother D-Shot was 6. My sister Sugar T was 4, and my brother Muggsy was 2. You know what I mean? So I had to be like the man of the house. So I seen my mama working so tough that I became a hustler like her. Mm. You know what I mean? And I got an opportunity, so why not just keep going?
And then I just want to go back to some of the Master P stuff as a way to talk about business. I mean, some things that he does that you do, I don't know, you know, which came first. His deal with Priority is obviously after your deal with Jive.
Right.
But, you know, he kept his masters. They only got 15%.
Hmm.
So I guess my question is, did he learn that from you?
Did he take a page out of my book?
Yeah.
I'm glad to be of some assistance.
Okay. And then, you know, he's always... All those No Limit records have like 20 songs on them. You often have at least 15 songs, 13.
About 17.
Uh-huh.
17. My double CD, Element of Surprise, had like 22.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I never did the 12 song, 11 song. I think now a lot of people do 11.
Right.
Because you paid on 11.
Mm-hmm.
I give them extras. I always like to give them extras, like if you was in the streets and you serving, you understand me,
first
some cha-cha or something, you know, you want to you wanna shoot them something. Whatever you're doing, you want to put them extra. If you're selling clothes, you want to give a little bit of extra. Satisfy your people.
I don't think the people know that they're getting extra, though.
They don't know.
Right.
A lot
like,
of people expect, like, they get the records with the 15, 17 cuts, and they just expect that to be the norm. And they don't really understand that you only are getting paid on 10, 11 songs.
So
that there is...
Explain how that works, though.
Well, in terms of, I don't know who in the people who carve out the percentages of a record and the royalty and the breakdown of it, but they just, I guess, agree they're only paying on 10 songs, 11 maximum.
11 maximum.
Depending on your deal. So I guess in terms of radio play, performances, video play and stuff like that, that's, you know, you're making money and the record company has to pay you according to that. So I think for them, if there's like 20 songs and they're never going to, in their, I guess, their terms, their business, they're not going to make money. So it helps them to make money by just narrowing down the amount that they're going to pay out. If you want to put out more songs, that's better for them because
it's
like you're helping promote and they don't have to pay for whatever you're giving.
Another thing is no matter who's on the song, like you get 100%, right? The producer most of the time get 50% off top. You know what I mean? 50%. Then you split that. It's called writer splits. You know what I mean? And when you do your splits, like say me and Ali, he produced it. No, me, you, and Q-Tip rapping on it. And then just say Kanye produced it.
Okay.
That's 50% to him no matter what. And then we got to split the other 50%.
Right.
You feel me? Unless it's a play over our sample where the original people that had the original beat that we played over on the percentage. It's still, whatever we got left, we got to split that percentage up. And that's, a lot of it is performance. Like performance publishing is different than mechanicals. Performance is like, you feel me, BMI, ASCAP, you know what I mean? It's, we got to split that no matter what. So a person can get on my song for free and don't charge me or nothing and won't ask for mechanicals or nothing, but he has to get his performance. Now they got Sound Exchange, which is a lot of people don't know about Sound Exchange. You know, that's Sirius Satellite. You know, that's hitting money that is in the pipelines that you don't even know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, NPR and all its member stations have a deal with them.
See? You see what I'm saying? So what I did, when I first found out about it, I was like, I've got to hurry up. I'm going to sign up for this thing. You know, when I got my check, like, man, I had that much in the pipeline? Like, 80,000. Just didn't even know. Like, you know what I mean? It's money, that you get paid quarterly. You know what I mean on that? Just like BMI and ASCAP. So it's just a lot of artists don't know that it's money out there for you, and you know what, I got so many songs out there, I'm probably missing money because a lot of them I haven't did the actual
registering
business.
The
splits, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, because I did songs with hella people.
if you do a song, you put it out, but for whatever reason, just one person doesn't have their publishing situation together, you're not getting paid on that song.
No one is getting paid.
It could sell a million units and be like played. Like if one person is just like out of line, then everyone's just standing there waiting.
A lot of the youngsters that I deal with, because I deal with a lot of independent artists, I tell them, man, you gotta sign up for BMI. I say, you can go online. I say, if you need some help, I can lead you in the right direction. A lot of people don't know that's some good bread. You know what I mean? That's some good bread. And if you turn in all your songs, you know, it's really some good bread. Like okay. I say, I haven't even turned in all. I got to do that because it's money missing, and I can't be missing money.
When I mentioned when we first sat down about business-wise in the South and everything, what is your relationship with Lil Jon and how did that come about?
I remember hearing Lil Jon way back in the days. We had the "I Like Them Girls." He had a song called "Tell This Dude Hella Funny," right? But I met him through Too Short, you know, just being on the road, me and Short doing shows, and he was always cool with Short. You know what I mean? I always stayed cool with him. You know what I mean? And got in some of his videos. I played the Ice Cream Man in one of them. I think it was Throw Your Hood Up. Then we did a song called Rep Your City. Me, him, Petey Pablo, and I think Bun B, yep. And 8-Ball, was 8-Ball? 8-Ball was on there too. 8-Ball, Bun B, Petey Pablo, me and Lil Jon. It was a banger. That's what really did it. We just started connecting.
So that's a lot of different cities.
Yeah, that's a lot. And it was one of the ones. And so I stayed in contact. And we was cool, like real cool. We would always do shows together and stuff. And so I, it was, you know, Lil Jon was popping at this time, like real, like later on, like in 2003, four, all that era, he was popping. I was like, that was my last album on Jive after Breaking News, which 2003. So I was free and clear. So one day I was just doing what all of us do. I was in the bathroom, and you know, and it, this one, the two-way pagers was out, and so I'm just, I was like, man, I wonder what I'm gonna do, you know. I wonder what I'm gonna do. Let's see what's my next move. I gotta make my next move my best move. And a voice. It was God. It was definitely God, because he just put it in my head. It was like, call Little John. I promise it was just that clear. Call Little John.
Kind of sound like Little John. Right now.
So I call. Hey, I say, I text him. I say, hey man, give me a call. He called me back. I say, man, look, I'm off this deal. I'm done with Jive. We were going our separate ways. It was all love, but I need a new home. I say, what's handing? Oh, you want it? OG? Oh, you want? I say, yeah. I say, man, what's handing with BME? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He said, man, I'm going to call you right back. Let me call my people. Right? Boy called me back in like 35, 40 minutes, right? It was like, they ready to go. Let's go. Let's get the lawyers talking. What's your lawyer name? What's the number? And there it is from there. And that, like, that helped revise my career, too, because I was able to display my music again on a nationwide scale. And they all got behind me. And I went in there and knocked out a great album. That album went gold. And that was later on in my career. I was like 37, something like 38.
And he,
you know what I mean?
And Lil Jon produced Tell Me When to Go.
He produced Tell Me When to Go. He produced Tell Me When to Go, You and That Booty. That's a gold single. The album Get a Report Card went gold. Snap Your Fingers with Platinum. I was on that with him. That was actually going to be my song because we made it up during my session. But he was like, Fody, you got this hyphy movement going on over here. We got the snap movement. You're going to be part of both of them. This is going to be a better look for it to be my song. You know what I mean? And I understood. It worked out right. You know what I mean? And so, but I was on the record with him, and I shined. We did the video. The song went platinum.
Yeah, and then for you and that brings in T-Pain.
T-Pain. Now, let me tell you this one. T-Pain at the time had I'm in Love with a Stripper, and I forgot the other one. But none of the rappers that he rapped with to this day, even the Florida rappers, they wasn't rocking with him like that. Everybody started rocking with T-Pain when he did You and That Booty with me, that particular record, You and That. And that went about by my boy Al Capone out of Memphis, Tennessee, that showed the boy Terrence Howard how to say man in that Hustle and Flow. You feel me? Memphis, Tennessee, I see you echo. You know what I mean? And me and Al Capone, actually, he was signed to my label in Steel Family. You know what I mean? And so he was in the studio with me vibing. Lil Jon had did the beat to You and That, and we needed a hook. And he was like, man, we need to get somebody that's under the radar, but that's good, that, you know, he fresh, but don't nobody know, woo-woo. And so he was like, we was all thinking. Maurice Garland was in the studio. My boy Sean Kennedy from San Jose.
She's talking about writers, music writers.
Yeah. And so the boy Al Capone say, man, how about T-Pain? Right? We was like, yeah, who got a line on T-Pain? Maurice Garland just, I do. I just did a bio on him. Right? So he called Boo, Akon brother, right? Because T-Pain was signed to Akon label. Man, put him, Boo say, we're going to be down there. I'm sending him down there. Man, that boy came down there, and he just so happened, he was staying in Tallahassee, Florida at the time, but he just so happened to be in Atlanta at that day. Man, he came through there, and this was my first time ever meeting him, but he was a fan. He was just, what's up, Earl? What's up, Fonzarelli, Earl? What's up, Fonzarelli, Earl? You know, he real comedy, right? I say, what's happening with a boy? Woo, woo. Man, boy, let me hear that song, man. He heard the song, man. Boy went in there and knocked that thing down at like 20 minutes for real. Like, it was just natural. And everybody say he need that auto-tuner. That boy really can sing. He did. He put the auto-tuner on it after he already did it. And history was made.
What you gonna do when I pin the block? Pull up on that ass in the brand new truck. Speakers on blast with tremendous knock. TVs in the dash, rims just won't stop. You need to be down with a pimp like me. I ain't turning down nothing but my collar, you see. I'ma leave you with my number, you should holler at me. Cause I'm a baller, can't nobody hustle harder than me. Ooh. Girl,
I've been shaking, shaking. That's how that happened with me and T-Pain. And look how many artists start rocking with him after that, man. I mean, he made so many people a lot of money. Cause them hooks was impeccable, I mean. And he got paid too. He rich from doing hooks. He probably got paid doing more from doing hooks on other people's stuff more than he did for his solo projects, for his real or his albums. You feel me?
Mm-hmm. One more other person to talk about Tupac way back in the day, 93, 92. I mean, speaking of practice looking hard.
Yeah.
What was your relationship with him like?
Oh, good, man. You know, Pac was, you know, travel all over the world. So when we can get together, we stay talking on the phone all the time. But when we can get together, we party. We kick it tough, you know what I mean? Dude was the type of dude that if he like you, he love you. You know what I mean? And he was outspoken. And he spoke the real. He just spoke the real. And his whole story is incredible. You know what I mean? Just life in general. But he came to, I really wasn't, like he had mentioned, who told me that? I think Richie Rich had, we was at some place in, what was it? It was Juneteenth in Sacramento or Dixon or Davis. And Richie Rich was like, 40 up, Tupac looking for you, man. He want me to give you his number. And you know what I mean? Give him a call, man. You know what I mean? So I called him. And they had told him he had shouted out E-40 and the Click on his album. We independent artists. We like, shoot, this big artist shouting us out? You know what I'm saying? We independent. This be way before Jai, like 2-3 years before Jai. He's shouting us out. And I like, man, right on for the shout out, woo, woo, woo. And he said, yeah, man, we're going to get together, man. And, you know what I mean? Show him what we do, man, woo, woo. And we stayed in contact real tough after that. And then he came to my... This is 1992. He came down to the studio on Solano Avenue, and we did what was that song called? We never put it out. We still got it. Studio Tone got it, and because I never did my verse, I was so happy kicking it with him. He did his because he used to write so quick. You know what I mean? So he mentioned E-40 and the Click, and this one he was Thug Life. This before the Outlaws. He didn't mention nothing about the Outlaws because that wasn't his crew at that time. You feel me? It was Thug Life. You know what I mean? Big Psych in them. You feel me? So then we just stayed in contact. What was after that? Jack the Rapper and all kind of other places we hooked up at. And then he had court. And I said, when are you going to be back in the Bay? I got court next week. Woo, woo, woo. And 93, I had a video called, a song called Practice Looking Hard. And that's when he came to the video and was with me all, just hung out all day from early after court to nighttime. And that's why you go on YouTube and see a bunch of footage with him, with kicking it with little kids in the neighborhood and older people and just kicking it. Like he was so embraced. Everybody rolled out the hood red carpet for him. You know what I mean? And then from there on, we just stayed connected and doing music together, held song after song. And, you know, I was happy to be part of All Eyes on Me. You know what I mean? That album. Shoot. He was on my platinum album in a major way. You know what I mean? He was on the Hall of Game album. You know what I mean?
All Eyes on Me, another double album.
That was a double album.
Did you guys ever talk about business?
You know, he was militant. Like, man, we gonna show them. We gonna show them other folks how we gonna get this money. he had an ideal. He had, you know, one ideal that never came to light. But I know he would have been good at it. It was called. You know how they had Planet Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
how all the actors got together and put that together at the time. Was mm-hmm. that what they did?
Yeah.
Right. So he wanted to get all the rappers to do Gangsta Cafe, and we have like Al Capone. You know what I mean? Like, when you come in there, you see a picture of Al Capone, Frank Nitti, all the gangsters, and, like, pictures of them. Just like Planet Hollywood, but upscale and everything, but called a Gangster Cafe.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of this?
No, I had not.
That was one of his dreams. That's what he said. He's like, you might want to put your money in this. I was like, well, let me know when. I got a little bit of Gouda. You know, I need in.
I think, you know, it's something that's to still... For a hip hop artist, especially, like, you know, the art form's been around for a minute, to see and people are making money, to see people come together and make a power move like that, because I don't think that's happened yet.
Haven't.
So
it haven't, man. And you know, that's the thing. We better together than separate. You
absolutely.
Know, and I try to tell cats. You know, when I rock with Too Short. See, one thing about me and Too Short. You know. I respect him as being before me, and he taught me a lot just through his raps and the way he did it, and he was the first one to let his nuts hang over his shoulder and say the things he said, and his beats was, you know, a lot of people don't know his beats was with the sound he is now, mm-hmm. way back in the early 80s with the heavy bass line, and that was him on the keyboards, Todd Shaw, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once me and Short start really connecting, it can't be no fallouts or nothing like that, because you know why? I'm going to always respect him as being the first. A lot of cats won't do that. They'll just be like, man, well, I'm over you now. Woo, woo, woo. I'm way over you. I'm way more popular. I'm the dude right now. Woo, woo. It ain't about that. Mm-hmm. You got to pay homage, man. You know, these new cats don't pay homage like that. You know, that's why they always separating and all going this all over the place. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Everybody got to get their egos, and they don't know people like Too Short is just going to be around forever, because, you know, he embroidered in the game. He's in there. And what do you do about it? You
why,
know what I mean?
Why do they not know their history?
I don't know. I was just talking to Steelo Bell. We and Steelo Bell. Steelo Bell got one like T-shirts in a movement that's called Hip Hop Don't Know You. You know what I mean? Pretty much, because they don't know hip hop. They refuse to go back and do their research and pay homage to the African Bambaataz and the Melly Mel and the, you know what I mean, and Kool Herc and all them dudes, and you know what I mean, Grandmaster Flash and Cash and all the OGs, you know, way before us. You know what I mean? And they just don't want to do it. Some do. But and they got the power to do it, because Google is there for you.
Mm.
But some of them just think, you know, just because they on right now, they think they're gonna be on forever. No, you not with that. Not doing your research and not looking how it was done before.
Yeah, what worries me about that though is that maybe journalism is letting this next generation down also.
Journalism is, because they not even woke. They don't do their history checkup. They don't know everything either. Just know.
You can't find out about Federal on WorldStar.
Mm-hmm.
But
a lot of people think my first album came out in like 94.
Right.
Somewhere around there. 92. But as a group, MVP, me, D-Shot, Be Legit, and Sugar T, before we changed our name to The Click, we was MVP, and that was 1988. Then after that, I came with Mr. Flamboyant in 89. That was an EP. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't start from there. So I was around. It just wasn't just... But in my neighborhoods and during throughout the whole Bay Area and Seattle and L.A. and all, you know, the West Coast, it just started going where we needed to go. And it blossomed. But, yeah, they need to do more due diligence on what's going on with the people before even me.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of radio used to be different. Radio is very different on the West Coast from the East Coast. I mean, you've spoken about this before, that, like, West Coast musicians get played a lot more on the West Coast.
We do when you got one it got to be overpowering because they play more South music than anything.
Yeah.
The That's West Coast true. Play more yeah. South music. But you know what's so cool about it? And I love my South. I love the South. I love the streets of the South. But I can't say I love the powers that be as far as a lot of the DJs because they scared to let their nuts hang over their shoulder and play a West Coast artist knowing he got a blap. Like I had a song called Trick, which was Player Don't Act Like a Trick.
You can say the real name of the song.
Oh, okay. I had a song called Bitch. Me and Too Short. That was all over. That was a party banger. I can sing that anywhere in the United States, and they're going to rock with that. Now, I mean, I had a song called Function before the sound started getting bigger. Mm-hmm. They didn't even play that in the South because you know why? They biased. They're like, no, it's West Coast. First thing they say, that's West Coast. But yet still, they want to come to the West Coast and get our sound. It's a lot of cats want the Bay Area L.A. sound. I'm just being honest. I ain't no phony dude, but it's the truth. I'm not saying the artists is haters that come get the sound. Maybe they open-minded. I that's how I look at it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying the DJs and the program directors, they the ones who, you know, pretty much to me set trim. Like, that's West Coast. You know what I mean?
How do you get a job as a program director?
I don't know. I think you just climb your way up the ladder slowly but surely. You know, you start off as a DJ. You might even start off as an intern.
And lose your soul. I don't know what it is, though. I don't know. You know, just connection. I don't know. I can't say that because I know that some program directors, they are connected. They know what it is. They know what's in the streets. But I don't know if it – things are really different now because it's more corporate. And I don't know if that corporate mentality was going on in the 80s and 90s. We just didn't call it corporate. I don't know what it was, but.
Man, DJs got to get permission to play, to put a song in a mix nowadays, especially where we at. You got to get permission to even play. You know, back in the days, you can just, I'm going to play this song tonight because I just want to because it's one of the ones and I think it can go. Now, you got to get a permission. You got to get an email, everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't play it. Or else you mess around and get fired or something, man.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know who breaking records. I think artists are breaking their own records just by posting their song up on the internet, and if, you know, and then the DJ say, oh, that might be one of them ones. I'm gonna try it. You know, but
there was this crazy moment at the Kanye Tribe show when Kanye, right before he did Blood on the Leaves, he said, listen, Ebro, this is, I'm paraphrasing, but like, listen, Ebro, this is the one I want next. And it was like he had to demonstrate that the whole garden was feeling that song before Ebro would put it in rotation on Hot 97.
Yeah, we know Ebro. Ebro from the Bay Area. Well, he from, I can say, pretty much Sacramento. He was, when we started DJing way back in the day, he was always cool. But, you know, I think that he let his nuts hang over his shoulders for me on a song called Tell Me When to Go. He played that. And I think they played You and That Booty, too. But I'm trying to tell him,
sure
Function? Did. Function was definitely one that he passed on. And I'm be honest with you, bro. You should have been blapping that, man. You know what I mean? You should have been blapping that. You should have been on that. And a lot of the Greg Streets of the world, they should have been playing it. I don't understand it. So when you hear one of them ones come around in Z40, don't hesitate to blap that for me, okay? Do that for your folks, okay? It's all love. I'm not tripping. It's love, okay? Hello. I ain't got time for playing. I'm just saying, man, we out here trying to function. 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 I ain't got time for playing. I'm just saying, man, we out here trying to function. We out here trying to function, bitch. You're fucking off my high, get about my mix. You're messing up my vibe, I'm trying to get some crap. Put it in my ride, take it to the rim. I'm toasted and sloppy off of a broccoli Bacardi. 150 watt out my body, about that green like wasabi. Like in Gwari, we mobby, we bossy, back to fuck off. Getting money, my hobby, not getting money, it's not. All the rappers I listen to is Z40 and Pop. I'm having my revenue player, having this guap. I'm on my fly, big nigga shit, man, I stay laced and groom. I spray myself with sucker repellent, my nigga not perfume. Anything you got, I can sell with a hustler, think I can't.
Think I
get the gap, sell the White House, black paint.
Black
word candy, S-L-A-N-G. Thinking about taking $1 million insurance policy out of my mouth.
Hey, bitch, try this. Guaranteed, turn square to a bye, bitch.
I have two more questions, and then I'm told you gotta go.
Okay.
One is about the next generation. We talked a little bit about them. some of whom you disapprove, some of whom you'll work with.
Yeah.
There's one song with Danny Brown and Schoolboy Q.
Yeah,
that's
three
very different voices on one song.
Perfect. I love them dudes.
Why?
Because they're talented and they're different. They're not like everybody else, and they dare to be different. That's they don't mind being different. And we all different. So you got we all got unique voices. Our rap styles are all different. Why not put all three of us on the track?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So with features, you kind of tell a story. Who you put on is part of the, like, the personnel is part of the song.
Right. It ain't who I can get. I can get a lot of rappers. There's probably a couple that I probably can't get. You know what I mean? It's probably like, never know when that happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I rock with those who rock with me and those who I like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to fit a particular song. And if I don't get you at it, it's a lot of other rappers out there that probably didn't get on these three albums that I got coming. But my next ones, I probably got it already in my mind who I want on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like young talent and the older cats.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I rock with a lot of people, man. You know, just talent, recognized talent.
I Am Sue and Young Scooter.
Yeah. I got Scooter. I got me, Gucci Man, and Scooter on one, you know. That's who Gucci rock with, Scooter. And with that song, that's the projects. That's called the Project Buildings. And that one go hard. I do got I Am Sue. I got I Am Sue on a couple of them. I got him, Sage the Gemini on one, and Eric Statz. And they all from the Bay Area, okay? So we got on one song. Then I got I Am Sue on another one. Me, him, and Cool John, he's part of HBK. They all together. You know what I mean? So, and I Am Sue was on the function, original function, before I got French Montana and Red Cafe and Chris Brown and Jeezy on the function remix. That's another thing. Even when I went and got them on the function remix, they still didn't want to play it. And it was a club banger of the year. You feel me? So that's all. I just want to say that real quick.
Okay. I have my last question, and I'm like a little bit nervous about asking it, but I'm going to anyway.
Why are you nervous?
Because it's about...
Is it something from 20 years ago?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No. Now I want to know about 20 years ago.
No, I'm just saying.
So you talked about like making turn-up records and function records and things that will work in the club, and we've spoken about this before, ways to tell if a record is going to work in the club, if it's at the right tempo for the DJ to mix with everything mm-hmm. else that's happening at the
yeah.
time. You also talk about making songs for the bitches.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
It's making songs for the bitches is that shit. What are we doing with the turn up shit? I mean, Like Episode. That's a song for the broads.
Okay.
That's a song for the females to feel good about themselves, you know, or whatever. We can have an episode. And then I might have a song with I'm just bigging up a girl. Like, I got a song called Salute. I Salute You.
Mm-hmm.
With me and Raheem. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that ain't on this album, but it was on the Block Brochure 1, 2, and 3. It was on them.
Mm-hmm.
It was on that one, so... I just cover all angles. I'm sharp on all four corners. So I cover all four corners of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I might talk about the dope game. I might do some a club banger. I might tell a story about how a motherfucker got his head knocked off in the hood. I might talk about something real uplifting. Like I put God in a lot of my raps, a lot of them, you know, because at the end of the day, you know what I mean? Faith is where it's at. You know what I mean? I go deep. I just cover every angle. I'm a true artist, and I'm unique, and I'm an innovator, and I refuse to do what everybody else do. When everybody else go right, I'm going to go left.
I feel you. I have to ask, though, because sometimes it feels like people make songs for, like, everybody else, and everybody else means men, and
yeah.
then they make songs that are just for the women, and it's like we're not supposed to enjoy everything that's available to us.
You know, it's a trip. I got a song called The Art of Storytelling that all the females like. I don't know why they like it. The Art of Storytelling is, it ain't a real story, but it's a story that is something that everybody can relate to because it really go down in different neighborhoods. You know what I mean? but they love it because it's real. It's like, it ain't real, but it's real. It's like it's painting a picture with my lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a storyteller. That's another thing. That's what we lack right now. Storytelling. True. Everybody want to do punchlines and metaphors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Stay on the subject and let's paint a picture. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There it is.
I love your stories. I love your rhythms. It makes sense now, knowing that you're a drummer. You know, like,
yeah.
Now it just, so you, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, that's because your rhythms are like, it's, you very melodic.
And yeah, I'm all over the place,
yeah,
right?
But it's in such a good way, and it's a lot of people don't know how to do that. You know, so it makes sense now.
Right on. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Was these some clown niggas or some reputable really get down niggas? Where them niggas from? What side of town? I'ma split they crown, nigga. Don't even look over there. Act like we ain't tripping. The next few days, partner came up missing. Don't even look over there. Act like we ain't tripping. The next few days, partner came up missing. The art of storytelling. 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 What you think we oughta do? We gotta outthink them niggas. See, it take a fool to catch a fool. Anybody got any pictures? Go to their MySpace page. Bet you one of them right. I can almost guarantee you'll find a flick with the rest of them in the bag. Ever since I received the disturbing news, ever since I ain't been sober, we gotta react right now, my nigga. We can't wait for the shit to blow over. Well, I've been doing a little bit of homework, and I know this broad to know his cousin. And his cousin know this dude, he on Belushi. And he mixing that shit with the Pay-Pay. And dude be around the way-way. And it just so happened he know with a nigga that pulled the trigger, stay late. His head at behind his Yola and keeping his fucking bread at his bread at his broccoli, his okra, his greens, his guns, and lead at lead at. Let him know that we got muscle. Let him know that we ain't weak. Let's hit all these spots at once. Come through there every day for a week. We in the middle of a damn drought, pucking them niggas out. 7.62s and 223s, showing them what we about. Don't even look over there. Act like we ain't tripping. The next few days, partner came up missing. Don't even look over there. Act like we ain't tripping. The next few days, partner came up missing. The art of storytelling. 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 Ooh.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this Mac Russ, man. That nigga 40 water, man. Real nigga, man. That's yeah, it. I grew up with the nigga, man. I know he's solid. You hear me?
Tell him niggas, yeah. Russ. Tell him niggas, man.
But let me tell you something about what I had to do the other day, though. You're gonna keep this on the hush, though, okay?
Tell him.
I had my pit niners, man, right? Getting all didn't our could nose, man. It was a situation, right? Yeah, we got on it quick, though.
Quick? Hella quick?
Got on that nigga head, man. Yeah, got on his helmet, man. Yeah, it was ugly, E.
It was bad?
But check this out, man. Yeah, we monsters over here, man.
Hyenas.
You know what I'm saying? So we don't got time to be playing with no niggas, no nothing, right?
Huh.
So we snapped that nigga up real quick, you know what I'm saying? Niggas jumped out on him and
What you do?
He out of there.
He's no longer?
No longer.
Don't even look over there. Act like we ain't tripping. The next few days, partner came up missing. Don't even look over there. Act like we ain't tripping.
Like
the next few days, partner came up missing.
The art of storytelling.
The art of storytelling. The art of storytelling. The